Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
I laughed a lot. I smiled. I was having a good time.
Anyway. I mean, we're going to be reading all of Discworld, so
yeah,
we will get to them.
This was one of those unique aspects of I see the value of actually physically reading this rather than listening to an audiobook. He cuts away a lot of the unnecessary fluff, like chapters. Welcome, welcome everyone to the Tutor Round Podcast. My name is Richard.
My name is Austin.
Today we're talking about one of the GOATs, one of the GOAT authors, Terry Pratchett, in his book, Guards, Guards. I believe book 8, if I am not mistaken, in the overall Discworld series. This was
for those people right now, it's book 1 of the City Watch, so this is an entry book for Discworld.
True.
So just before those people click up, this could be your entry into Discworld if you've not read it yet, although it is a book 8 because how Discworld works, there's many series within the 41 novels. It's 41, right? 42, 41.
I believe 41.
41 novels. There's many series, and this one is called The City Watch, so it's book 1 of, how many are there?
I don't actually remember the total number.
5 or 6. Or so. But I've only read book 1. You've read more than that, right?
Of this series, no.
Oh, okay. So we're at the same page.
To the second City Watch book. Yes.
Okay.
So we're at the same page.
But yes,
here.
Please continue. Spoiler free for the first time, 15 minutes. Continue. What were we going to say?
Well, we're off on another Discworld book, which means one less closer to deleting the channel.
For those who know.
For those who know.
Yes.
All right. And then as for where we decided to read this book, we read this book because it was our selection for our book of the month for our book club, our exclusive Patreon Discord, where we do books once a month, and everyone on there also does community book clubs. It's great. If you're interested, sign up down below.
There's a 1 in 1,000,000 chance you'll like the book club. I'll just say that. A 1 in 1,000,000.
That's a good reference. It's a good book reference. I'm assuming they've read it. Maybe not.
No,
who knows?
Because it could have been a subtle thing. They wouldn't even know it's book reference because if they haven't.
I did ruin it. I'm trying to let him in on the inside joke.
Just in case you didn't know, that's in the book. You know, book okay.
Whatever.
How about that? Book okay. Just use all the references we can to get him out of the way.
Anyway, for the next couple minutes, we'll do spoiler-free for the book. We'll talk about it, give our rating, spoiler-free, of course. And then afterwards, we'll go spoiler, full details of the whole book, and you'll find out what we think.
Terry Pratchett, we've talked about him quite a lot on here, having read not all of Discworld. Mm-hmm. He's one of our favorite authors.
He is my favorite author of smiles. No other author has made me smile as much as Terry Pratchett.
How would you pitch, would you recommend Guards, Guards as an introduction to Terry Pratchett, to Discworld?
Yeah.
And why?
I mean, it's certainly one of the entry points. There's a couple. But a highlight for this book being an entry. So you'll hear a couple different entry points, one being Mort, the other being Small Gods, and then there's Guards, Guards. There's also the Witches series and other books as well. But a highlight for this one being your first entry book is it one of the central locations. I would even go far to say, like, the location is so important, it becomes a character. The city of Ankh-Morpork is central to this story, unlike the other entry Discworld books. I'd say it's the most important thing in Discworld is Ankh-Morpork. It's an amazing city. It's some of the best world building you're going to get. It is, the city itself is where I fell in love with Discworld. I really liked Discworld. And then I was taken to Ankh-Morpork and I was like, oh, I love Discworld. So and this is a great entry point for it.
Yeah, Guards takes place in the city of Ankh-Morpork. If you guys don't know, Discworld's an absurdist comedic fantasy series, and Guards, the one thing that this does specifically, I think a lot of earlier Discworld books do. The only one prior to this I've read was Mort, which is book 4 in the order of Discworld, but this book, especially Guards, plays on all those typical fantasy tropes you know of dragons and knights and all of your cliches that you would roll your eyes with after Tolkien came out with Lord of the Rings, then you see the next several decades of these copycats. Well, Terry Pratchett takes all of those standards in the genre and just satirizes them. Monty Python kind of style and A Hitchhiker's Guide, if you've read that, by Douglas Adams, just very much comedic and satirizes the notions you have of the cliches you typically see and makes them funny.
But also goes the step further of satire coming from a place of someone who deeply understands and loves the fantasy genre itself. Because often that can come across as, like, you know, really good satire when it comes from a place of understanding and love of something.
Yeah.
And Terry Pratchett certainly knows the fantasy genre well enough to actually give good satire of it.
The premise of this book, you can see a dragon on the cover here. A dragon is being let loose in the city of Ankh-Morpork, and the only people that can really stop it is Carrot, the main character Carrot, who thinks he's a dwarf, but he's like 6'4", or 6'6", something like that. He's a tall guy, but he was raised as a dwarf, but he's not. He's a tall human being, and he gets sent to the city watch, and he is somebody that goes by the books, and he must have law and order, follow the law. But in the city of Ankh-Morpork, the law is just kind of there. They don't really follow it. They actually have a thieves' guild you'll find early on where the thieving is encouraged. And that is the premise of the book. How is this Carrot and his crew going to stop a dragon? And the dragons are unconventional dragons. Everything's kind of unconventional. Satirizes it. And it's that fun, absurd world you'll get.
Yep. Overall, what were your overall spoiler-free ratings of this book?
This was a 3.75, a really good on our rating scale for Guards. And I would say the best aspect of it, no surprises, the prose. Prose was top tier for me. What about you? What was your out of 5?
This edged into a 4.0 on my scale. I think it's a great book. The best parts being the world building and prose, both identical score for me. And God, it really, as much as I'm going to praise the world building, the prose equally is, it's so many funny jokes, the situational humor, as well as the just grammatical humor is incredibly fun. I was laughing at all the fart jokes. I was laughing at all the, you know, political jokes. It was great. Everything, every angle hits it all. So
this one was pitched by Dove in our Patreon. Thank you, Dove. And I know Summer, shout out to Summer, who this is now 5 stars, one of her favorite books she's read. We had a lot of people in the book club, a couple saw as their new favorites, are now going to get into Discworld. We had some, so V and some others did not like the book because the jokes seem, as you were saying, hey, if you think the jokes are kind of making fun at you and not laughing with you, some people might like it. Just humor is very subjective. So if you actually, here's a good kind of gauge to see if you'll like the humor in this book. There's a dedication, and I'm stealing this from Bookporn because I know Bookporn loves a dedication in this book, but I'll read you the dedication, who this book is dedicated to. And if it cracks a little smile for you, you'll probably like the book. Okay, here it is. Dedication. They may be called the Palace Guard, the City Guard, or the Patrol. Whatever the name, their purpose in any work of heroic fantasy is identical. It is, roundabout chapter 3, or 10 minutes into the film, to rush into the room, attack the hero at one time, and be slaughtered. No one ever asked them if they wanted to. This book is dedicated to those fine men. Oh, and also Mike Harrison, Mary Gentle, Neil Gaiman, and all the others assisted. Okay, blah, blah, blah. But he assists, basically dedicates this book to those 10 minutes into the film, those 3 chapters in, city watch guards who just die. This is to them out there. And
their purpose is death.
And he gives them more purpose in this book. Also, I should mention, this came out in like 1989. I think I have that right. I could double check. But this is a book from the 80s. Discworld spanned, I think, several decades. He was writing this stuff. So go ahead. If you want to pick it up, it'll be on our description below for guards. But without that, you have anything else to add before, or you think you should give any more information, or you want to get into spoilers?
Nah, let's go right in spoilers. I want to talk about the book.
Spoiler warning. Click off if you have not read the book or if you don't want to hear spoilers. All right. Emotional impact. Would you give it out of 5 stars?
I give this one a 4.0. I thought it was great. Again, it's Terry Pratchett, Discworld. I'm smiling from all the jokes. I had a particular funny one. One of the funniest jokes I thought for this book was when the cult is basically right before their death. They're all talking to her. They're trying to figure out what's going on. And within their conversation, they're trying to count the number of people, and death is adding to the conversation. They're going, wait, who is that? And only the audience knows because of death's text being in bold without quotes, speaking from the world. I thought it was hilarious. And also just, this was one of those unique aspects of, I see the value of actually physically reading this rather than listening to an audiobook.
How does the audiobook do it? Did you listen to it before?
I did both. But yeah, the audiobook is really well done, especially the brand new one done by Penguin Random House. They have great famous British authors that, or British actors that are doing these roles, and they're also consistent across the entire series. So
death in book 8 is death in book 20 or whatever.
Exactly. And so it's actually, I believe it's Bill Nye as death. It's fantastic. He's great.
Nice.
Not the science guy, the British man.
Different Bill Nye. Got
yes.
It.
Yeah. I just wanted to specify that for you Americans out there. But yeah, so I really loved those jokes. I love the farting dragon. It's great. It's hilarious. So, and then also just the concept of legal thievery. And then everything with Carrot. My God, there's so much. I laughed a lot. I smiled. I was having a good time.
That's great. I had a good time. I give it a 3.5. Good as well. Oh no, you give it a 4. Yes.
Yeah, but that's why I had a great time.
Yeah. Okay, there's a couple of things. The big joke in this book that I'll think back to because, okay, two things. One, the book's going for humor, obviously, this parody. I thought, I saw a lot of the scenes seem very, like I could imagine it so well on TV. Like perfectly. It was almost written as if this should be on TV as a punchline. One of the ones that stuck out was Carrot, who grew up as a dwarf, or in dwarf culture, is now in the city watch, and he follows things by the book, follows the rules. He walks by and hears all near this bar, this tavern, all the dwarves are causing a ruckus inside, and Carrot goes in there, and he just scolds them. He says, this is not acceptable, and makes the dwarves feel so bad, and they're going, oh, you're kind of right, Carrot. And there's this comedic scene where he causes a bar fight, and outside, Vimes and the others are just going, wait, is Carrot winning? What's going on in there?
Is he fighting by himself? No, he's fighting all of them, and winning.
The joke that'll stick with me long after this, having just read this book recently within a couple weeks, is the one in a million joke where toward the end of the book, it satirizes the concept. If you ever see at the end of a book, end of the movie, there's a one in a million shot, and somehow the heroes come together and succeed, but only when it's one in a million.
Yeah,
because in this case where they're trying to shoot the dragon that's loose in Ankh-Morpork pork. And there can't be a 1 in a 10,000 or a 1 in 100, 1 in 9,000 something something to kill the dragon, or else it won't work. But it happens 1 out of 1 times if it's 1 in a million, because 1 in a million always works 100% of the time.
Yeah.
And so it's that running joke of we need to make the shot against the dragon. Okay, that's too accurate. I need to make it less accurate so that it equals to 1 in a million so that it does happen. It's like you want worse odds so that you could succeed, playing on the whole satire of one in a million. Oh my God, how's it gonna happen? Yeah. So that's the one that's gonna stick with me in my head a lot.
The awareness of satire physics is pretty wonderful in Discworld.
Yeah.
Like that's a consistent theme of, like, that's not a throwaway joke either. That is repeated in other stories as well. It's pretty funny.
Are there a lot of those kind of jokes that repeat over into the rest of Discworld?
I wouldn't even say it's a one-to-one repeat of the joke, but the situation and that joke is reality and therefore will crop its head up again. Like, it will fact, it's not a throwaway is mainly what I mean.
Got it.
It is, maybe it's not the big punchline of the next joke, but it's a factor in something else. Like, it's not just thrown away of like, oh yeah, that one in a million thing. No, it's brought up of like in, you know, while the wizards are studying of like mathematics and thing going like, oh yeah, this is, well, this was the famous one in a million shot. So they bring up that math, that Discworld math.
That's what's so well done about Pratchett humor is that it's not, he doesn't just make the joke for the sake of the joke for the most part. It's the jokes are internally consistent with the characters and the running jokes that keep happening. So for example, Carrot again, Carrot, who we know is this by the law, stick to the rules. He has studied the books all this time so that he can quote them when arresting somebody. And so it makes complete sense at the end where like, hey, I think Carrot's arresting the dragon. That brings a smile because you're going, oh, that's such a Carrot thing to do. It's not just Carrot's doing that and it's so out of character or out of nowhere, but you know that's Carrot. And so he's good at creating this situational humor. Or the humor I've noticed more in this one was puts a funny image in your head. You know, when you're just kind of joking with the guys and or gals and you're joking around and you're saying, you just make an absurd scenario and then you smile because you could just, oh, that's funny to imagine. Like, here's a mini scene here. So Carrot's saying this. In 1321, you know, a small cloud was prosecuted for covering the sun during the climax of frenzied Earl Hargarth's investiture ceremony. I hope Colon gets the movement. Vime stopped. He had to know. Wait, how? He said. What can you do to a cloud? Well, the Earl senses it to be stoned to death, said Carrot. Apparently 31 people were killed. And that's it. So it's just that imagining like a bunch of people throwing rocks at the sky and then just dying because they're falling back down on you.
Yeah.
But without saying that, it's just the image in your head is like, oh, yeah, I guess a lot of people would. That's just kind of humor.
Just imagining the entire army just on the walls of the city throwing the stones and it just going into the crowd.
Just poof. Yeah.
Yeah. Hilarious. Hilarious stuff. I mean, that is very Pratchett humor, and it adds along with the asides they have. So he has a little asterisk where they're, you know, you read the footnote at the bottom of the page, and that's often the situational imagery humor.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it landed for me. I thought it was great.
What'd you think otherwise emotionally? Did it punch you in the feels? Did it punch you in the story? Other things?
The dwarf scene where Carrot telling off the dwarves, I thought the budding romance between Vimes and Lady Ramekin was cute. I was enjoying it. I can't wait to see where that goes. Funny. I thought it was heartwarming with Carrot. It's just hopeful. And yeah, the romance was good for me. Everything worked. So yeah, great.
If anything, fun. And I think this was also very easy to read too. I'd say this is with all Discworld books. We can talk about this more later, but the lack of chapters, the tough thing was not knowing when to pause, but I think I did this in two sittings, so it didn't matter as much for me.
Mm-hmm.
Two or three sittings, but I just kind of, there wasn't, if somebody was trying to sparse this out, it's hard to find a stopping point. This was probably more useful and spoiler free, but did you have any trouble with finding a stopping point in the book?
Nah, not really.
No, yeah.
To be fair, I guess this is my personality of it. I have no problem stopping reading in the middle of a chapter.
Just
when I want to stop, I just close on that sentence and just I'll pick it up later.
I am done now, you psycho.
I can be in the middle of a fight scene and went, I'll pick that up later. Just put it down.
And then what will you read a couple paragraphs before to get back into it?
Sometimes you'll skip
a paragraph. You're like, what's happening right now?
No, I'll get right back to the sentence that you ended off with and then start from there again.
That is, there's a medication for that, I think. That's insane. You can't do like mid paragraph.
Oh yeah.
No,
frequently.
No.
Frequently mid paragraph.
You don't go to end of paragraph.
Nah.
Okay. You finish a sentence.
Sometimes.
Oh, you bastard. If it's a long sentence, you're like, ah.
I'll finish that sentence tomorrow. It's fine.
That's a Carrot. No, that's not a Carrot thing to do. You feel like a Discworld character right now. I'm done. But yeah, fun book. And yeah, any any other top tier moment for you? Because I think the one in a million joke, that'll stick for a long time. Otherwise, any standout funny scene?
Basically, any moment with Nobby. Nobby's just funny all the time. Nobby. Every single little aside is great. And I love him as a character. Nice. He's a standout side character that I hope gets... I'm sure he'll get more page time in subsequent Discworld books.
I've also heard the City Watch... So it's between the City Watch and the Death series as people's favorites, typically.
The witches are underrated severely.
You like them a lot?
I like them a lot because I hear nothing about them on online discourse really at all. But I love Granny Weatherdrop. I love the witches, and I really hope we get to them soon and give them more under... Because if you're in the know about Discworld or in fantasy genre, you know about Guards, you know about small gods, you know about death and mort and all this, but the witches should be talked about more. I hope we get to that soon.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to continue with City Watch first or go back to book one and go in order of Color of Magic, then two, then three, then four. Yeah. I think that the versus City Watch, and so I read this and Mort. Mort is the first of the Death series, which I'm not going to give anything for that. But I might want to go Death series first. I liked Mort more, but that's maybe when it gets into thought-provokingness. This was nice, good, fun, but want to talk about thought-provokingness now?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. What did you give that out of 5 stars?
I gave it a 3.5. I think it was good.
I also gave it 3.5. I also said good, yeah.
Yeah. Basically, if I think it's fairly obvious with the book's big major theme about being power, corruption, and, you know, unchecked ambition and how that can lead to a lot of mistakes and tyranny. That was the big theme of this book, which was exemplified by big old mean dragon on the top. So, and to that effect, it does a good job while making the whole situation pretty funny. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Am I missing anything pretty big from there?
It's a social commentary, and I kind of have a section here that maybe sums up part of it. Mm-hmm. And this is toward the end of the book, page 326, if you want to go into your personal journal here. And it starts with, it is Captain Vimes talking to, let me catch up where we're at. Oh, yeah. Carrot and Captain Vimes talking to one another. And let me give you some advice, Captain, he said. Yes, sir. It may help you to make some sense of the world, sir. I believe you find life such a problem because you think there are good people and the bad people, said the man. Oh, and sorry, this isn't Captain Vimes speaking. This is the patrician. Yeah, the patrician speaking. I believe you find life such a problem because you think there are good people and the bad people, said the man. You're wrong, of course. There are always and only the bad people, but some of them are on opposite sides. He waved his thin hand towards the city and walked over to the window. A great rolling sea of evil, he said, almost proprietorily. Shallower in some places, of course, but deeper, oh, so much deeper in others. But people like you put together little rafts of rules and vaguely good intentions and say, this is the opposite. This will triumph in the end. Amazing! He slapped Vimes good-naturedly on the back. Down there, he said, are people who will follow any dragon, worship any god, ignore any iniquity, all of the kind of humdrum everyday badness. Not the really high creative loathsomeness of great sinners, but of a sort of mass-produced darkness of the soul. Sin, you might say, without a trace of originality. They accept evil not because they say yes, but because they don't say no. I'm sorry if this offends you, he added, patting the captain's shoulder, but you fellows really need us. So that kind of segment is saying there's no good and bad, it's really just bad and other bad, depends what side you're on, and that kind of social commentary of people will just follow the rules. And in this case, the big social commentary seems to be that the City Watch and this thief guild that exists is propped up by the proprietor. The proprietor. It's propped up here by this protector of Ankh-Morpork Pork. And the reason he allows the thieving to happen is because
not the proprietor, the patrician.
Patrician.
I apologize.
So I just blindly followed.
I know.
Followed the rules. I didn't say no. Do you see live how this happens? I'm up in my score. So that scene where he's talking about how people will just follow whatever, not necessarily what's in the books, but what's enforced, essentially.
Yeah.
Because what's enforced in Ankh-Morpork Pork is the thieve guilds are sanctioned and thieving's allowed so that it's organized crime. Because organized crime is better than disorganized
also,
crime.
Also, one of the best jokes in the very beginning of the book that I knew I was going to love it is like the patrician basically saying he realized that if there's going to be crime in the city, it might as well be organized. I love that. And it's just
the
so
mafia
fun.
Had a point, no?
The mafia had a point. Like, I'd rather my crime organized, personally.
I'd rather have my crime in suits and ties.
Yeah.
I'd
like it with spreadsheets, please.
I want to know exactly the number of crime we're getting. And that, in this absurd fantasy world, you're going, oh, that's a fun little way to make a social point.
Yeah. Well, that's going into a little bit more of like morality versus legality and... Yep. You know, Carrot being kind of interestingly on both sides of it. Like, his character is very by the book, by the rules. Like, that's how he operates. But more often than not, he's actually just doing the morally right thing. So it's, okay, multiple layers here of Carrot thinks he's doing the legally right thing. But he's actually doing the legally wrong thing frequently, almost the entire time. He's actually doing the... not legally, morally right thing very often. And that's how he inspires everyone else to kind of change the law or just, you know, side skirt the law to actually do the right moral thing, which I find far more interesting than just that being very straightforward. That is like multiple switch ups there of a character who doesn't know what he's doing.
He's just following. He's following a follower. Yeah.
But he just picked the right ones this time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's also a part in there where there's a cynical character who, there was a quick, not throwaway line, but the cynical character was not as cynical as real life, because no one can be more cynical than real life actually is. And this kind of absurdist take, I see a lot of Terry Pratchett comes out and makes this absurdism to show, hey, life can be drab and cynical, so why not embrace the absurdity?
Yeah.
There's that kind of undertone too, and that's where the fun comes through. But yeah, that seems to be those were some of my takeaways. So you were asking that. I think that's the big one.
Sure, that's the big one. I think some of the smaller ones is definitely. I think between Carrot and Captain Vimes, a lot about, you know, pursuing who you are. So Carrot looking to the future of who he wants to become, who he wants to be, being young. And then Vimes constantly struggling with who he was, with his addiction, and being able to redefine yourself. So Carrot, who is young man, striving to define himself of like newly finding out he's a human, so finding out who he is, and then Vimes trying to redefine who he is. I think that's also a factor in there that I connected with on the story for the character level.
Do you want to go into characters?
Sure.
I gave it a characters a 3.75, a really good out of resource.
I gave it a 4.0. I thought these characters are great. All of them, even the side characters with barely any page time, just add so much to the story. Actually, it's a character that has a surprising amount of page time in this book, but is in nearly every single Discworld book, is the librarian. The librarian of the orangutan. Ook. He is everything. I love his character. I love how he gets far more of a central-ish role in this story. He's very often the side character in many of the other Discworld books, even the Wizards ones, where you would think he would play more of a role. So I love him in this. We already mentioned briefly Nobby of being like the opposite of the person you'd want to be a cop. Traditionally, but he is incredibly loyal and good friend, all this, but just a rap scallion. Probably shouldn't be in charge of the law.
And what about Captain Vimes? We've yet to mention Captain Vimes very much.
I know. I mentioned a little briefly, but I like Captain Vimes as the reluctant hero. Again, love myself a reluctant hero trope, but I think his struggle with alcoholism is handled seriously in the story. It's not taken as a joke. So there's a difference. When the author is telling a joke, because the narrator will often give jokes in the story. On particular Captain Vimes, the jokes about his alcoholism are not from the narrator. They're from him. He's like self-deprecating humor about himself, which I think gives a little light in Terry Pratchett is not laughing at alcoholics. Like, it takes it seriously. Alcoholics, like, self-deprecating humor rather than the opposite. I thought that was interesting. Yeah. His relationship with Ramekin, of both being kind of these outsiders people see as, you know, unreliable, weirdos, all this stuff. And so their budding friendship and possible romance, you know, the little romantic ties there is great. And then him learning to pick himself up of, like, you know, actually take responsibility and, you know, save the day. I loved it.
Captain Vimes and Carrot, what was interesting is you start the book going, oh, Carrot's your protagonist, but I think Captain Vimes is the protagonist of this story. Well, they're both very important.
If you define the main character as the one that undergoes the most change, it would be Captain Vimes. Captain Vimes starts as, you know, ultra cynical, doesn't think, you know, thinks the City Watch is nothing and they're not there to help anyone and ultimately has no responsibility or duty. By the end, it changes to a man who wants to protect the city and has a duty and responsibility and improve himself and save the day. Carrot was there for the beginning. He was like, I'm just going to follow the book. And
he's a static character who fills his role.
Yeah, exactly.
That's Carrot.
And he's fun. I love Carrot for that.
And is his name Carrot because Carrot and a stick?
That, I thought it was also Carrot Top. Like, he has orange hair? Like, tall Carrot?
The person Carrot Top?
Like a carrot top, meaning like orange hair.
That's like you call someone with
like curly orange hair, Carrot Top.
Wasn't Carrot Top an actual person though? I thought his nickname was Carrot Top. Wasn't he a person like the early 2000s? Wow.
We
either seem very old or young. I don't know what we are representing right now.
It also could just be a reference to carrots being in the ground. And, like, you think it's a small thing, a small little plant, and you pull it up, and it's actually this tall thing.
Oh, that's, I think that's a description he gave, actually.
Yeah, I believe it is.
Yeah,
so.
Okay, that would be, then we're, yeah.
That would also work.
But Carrot being the static character, he filled his role, funny, and the whole group, Terry Pratchett makes you just really root for all the characters here, and you're just going, oh, I want to see the City Watch thrive in this reckless city of Ankh-Morpork. Ooh, would you want to say Ankh-Morpork is a character of itself and defend why the city is actually a character?
I think the city goes beyond just being a setting and goes to being a character because the city does seem to have a life of its own and its own self-protection and self-setting. It has the city itself often has a personality. The city itself is described as, in very personable terms, it is a, you know, chaotic city. It's a grimy city. It's chaos. It's, you know, wild. All these different elements of it. And the fact that when the city's status quo is threatened, it almost feels like the city itself is fighting back against it and trying to shift it. Like, it feels eternal. No matter what you do to Ankh-Morpork, Ankh-Morpork will somehow correct itself. It feels alive, more so than a setting itself. So that's why I would classify it more as a character. Because as the books go on, I start to get a better understanding of what the city is and how the city's like. And beyond, I would say, like, just the buildings. Oh, what do the buildings look like? No, that's not really it. It's how are the people? How are the citizens of Ankh-Morpork? What are their feelings? What are their personalities? And how has the city defined them? And yeah, I love it.
And then we have Supreme Grandmaster.
Yes, the Supreme Grandmaster.
Monts, who turns out to be Monts.
Yes. I don't have too much to say about it. I just thought he had some funny lines of him dealing with his incompetent...
Brother Watchtower and...
Brother Watchtower. I could just imagine... Again, it's a picturesque of... Mm-hmm. I could see this on a screen.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
I mean, of him just rubbing his temples, going like, oh, I'm surrounded by idiots. And just wondering when they'll eventually like stop talking and just let him get to his point.
I love how British this book is. It's just like, I could so see this just being on British TV.
Yeah.
And just that very clear picture, as you said, for Grandmaster, just rubbing his head, rubbing his temples. You could see the carrot with the bumbling fool who's on the right side, though.
Yeah.
And you have all of these kind of archetypes that aren't just filling in, yes, they're filling in the roles, but he keeps the character so honest to their mm-hmm. So we have the Lady Sybil,
yep,
as well, with her dragons.
A few times. Yeah. I really like Lady Sybil a mm-hmm. lot. I really want to see more of her character in the rest of the series.
Yes. And you like the romance a lot.
Yeah. Again, it's the budding romance. Like, it's mm-hmm. not a romance. You could tell that that's an aspect of it, but for most of the story, it's them growing to respect each other and just this friendship that grows between them. That's primarily what it is, of both of them starting out realizing like, oh, this person, you know, is not worth my time. Like, this person is everything I expect them to be. And both of them realizing, oh, this person has a lot more to offer. There's a lot more to this person than I initially expected. And then the reverse of now they think about themselves that way. Of, oh, I actually have a lot more to offer than I thought mm-hmm. possible, both for Lady Ramekin and Vimes. So,
and we have the best cool. character. Death. Death is always there. However, gets a couple features. We see Death appear when someone gets incinerated by the dragon, when the brother Watchtower and them die as well. Death has his moments in here. And the funniest scene you said when we were talking emotional impact of, they're all saying, well, they're all speaking and they don't realize that there's an additional person in the room, and it's the Grim Reaper.
Yeah. I love that. Also, just his first scene in the book of him showing up to the person who got roasted by a dragon. And he's like, well, it's like, oh, I didn't think you showed up all the time. It's like, I show up every time I'm Death. And he's like, yeah, I know, but personally, I thought it was only for wizards and, you know, special occasions. And it's like, being roasted by a dragon would be a special occasion. It's like, fair enough. Doesn't happen that often.
Yeah.
It's very cute. And so, yeah, Death is great.
Anything else, or we want to go on to plot?
We didn't mention it, but Colin is...
Yeah.
He's another member of the Night's Watch. Yes. I don't have too much to say about him other than, like, I enjoyed him as a side character. I hope we get more of him as time goes on. But
his main character, sorry.
Go ahead.
His main character thing was him writing to his wife, right?
Yeah.
I like that setup idea. Again, just I could see it on screen of how funny it is. Just him having the night shift, his wife having the day shift, and the only way they communicate is over letters. They just never see each other.
Yeah.
And so they have a great relationship because
they never see each other.
They never see each other. So it's always this back and forth. And then he's surprised by the end of like, oh, my wife is all of a sudden a dragon or whatever she, what she do toward the end of the book that he's disgruntled by, whatever it is, they get over it and it's fine. But yeah. But yeah, Colin had, yeah, there's nice quirks too.
Yeah. I'm just hoping for more of him later, but
yeah,
a great cast of characters. And even the tiny characters that don't have too much of a role really just can stand out in one page. So yeah, great job, great characters.
And don't call the librarian the M word. That was another running gag too.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah. Or else the librarian gets very angry.
Very angry.
Yeah, I don't think we're missing any major characters. The dragon's the dragon.
The dragon's yeah. named the dragon and
he dragons.
Yeah.
Plot time?
She dragons.
Yes. Plot time?
Yep, plot time.
I give plot a 3.75, really good.
I changed my score from the book club initially when we were talking about it, thinking about it. I also gave it a 3.75.
Gotcha.
Really good plot. But thinking about it in the context of other Discworld books as well, and as far as like memorable plot, I think there's some certainly memorable scenes, but there's some meandering of like it. The plot points seem more set up for jokes rather than plot. And I think normally Terry Pratchett does a better job at like better integrating the plot into the jokes, or better integrating the jokes into the plot and not having a plot for sake of jokes. If that makes sense.
Well, this was a reread for you, right?
Yes.
Did you like it more, less, or the same upon reread?
I was less wowed with it on a reread.
Less.
This was very early on. I think this was my second. Pretty sure this was my second Discworld book.
Hmm.
And I was blown away, especially with because I was introduced to Ankh-Morpork in this book. I believe that's actually the case. I went... I think this is. I went Small Gods, then Guards. Then I did, I'm trying to remember the...
Not Mort.
Moist von Limpwick.
What the heck's that one?
Help me out. Going Postal. Oh, that was okay. My third book. So, introduction to Ankh-Morpork as a city kind of blew me away. Loved it. Now that I've been with the city a little longer. Yeah, I think the plot is really good, but it could be better.
Okay, got it. Yeah, the plot was set up where we had some letters that Carrot was sending home. So we had the Carrot stuff. We had Captain Vine's perspective. We would jump back to the Grandmaster. Let me make sure I'm not getting him wrong. Yes, the Grandmaster, the Supreme Grandmaster. And we jumped through these different point of views. And anything about the structure that you have to comment on? Anything about the... You said it meandered a bit. Was that more in the middle of the novel?
Yeah, mostly in the investigation section. I think before, the plot is pretty tight before, the introduction of Carrot being introduced to the Watch, and the Watch kind of like trying to show him the ropes and Carrot causing some mischief. And then by the end, the dragon is the, declares himself king. Everything from there on to the end, I think, is pretty tight as well. It's that middle-ish section of... Mm-hmm. Them trying to investigate, like finding the dragon. I think the highlight of those plot sections is, Lady Sybil and Vimes, and them going back and forth, and Sybil providing new information about dragon layers. But as a first plot, yeah, I think it meanders a little bit too much. And like that was the point in the book that I remembered least on reread, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
like
no,
that was,
yeah.
I was going, I didn't remember this section. I'm glad I reread it.
Got it.
That helps.
Yeah, the setup to this book is so memorable with the Thieving Guild and how the City Watch operates.
Mm-hmm.
And so that premise was very easy to... A good hook and good promise for the book. And kind of when you started this, or when I started it, most people, I think you know what you're getting into right away. Of immediately when I... Even reading the dedication and seeing Carrot come into the city, the little switch up, I think, was you thinking Carrot was going to be that the hero who comes and changes the City Watch and that it's his story, but you actually get kind of more focus on Captain Vime. So that was a little bit of the unexpected nature to it. But otherwise, I went in expect it set up that promise perfectly of this is going to be a satire on the fantasy genre, from a person who does respect the fantasy genre, and that's what made it fun. And a fun, quirky journey. I saw this as very episodic. I saw this as not a season of television, but as an episode of television. And I had a fun time with the episode. I think it was well structured and everything with jumping between these point of views. Again, I could just imagine the camera switching point of views of we're at Carrot, now we're Captain Vimes, now we're Lady Sybil. All these. The one thing, I guess, if any complaint is, so I actually had trouble sometimes getting into the point of view when it would switch. And it took me a couple seconds to go, okay, I'm in this person's head, or I'm in this person's head. But yeah, well set up. It was a fun episode. And I think the plot, the payoff of it, you get the City Watch doesn't even kill the dragon. The dragon's like, where is the dragon?
in alternate dimension space again, I guess.
Cool. Goodbye, dragon. But the payoff is also just fun. Nothing here blew me away, but it served its purpose for the book. Kind of like all the characters served the purpose. It was all good. It was good overall. And yeah, really good with, I guess, any big plot points. One, I was writing down a couple here of the Mont's reveal. Did that do anything for you? I guess if there was a point that was supposed to be, not mind-blowing, but was there supposed to be some sort of plot point that sticks out?
I didn't pin it at the very, so again, on the first read.
Yeah.
It didn't shock me, but it also wasn't telegraphed incredibly obviously from the beginning. Where I'm, it's one of those reveals of it's not really there to like really surprise you and get you with a hook, but it's also not completely expected. Yep. So it did fine, but I don't think it was a focus or point.
Got it. Okay, yeah.
How'd you feel about it?
Oh, that came up in the book club, like people talking about it. For me, I didn't think anything bad.
Yeah, it was more like...
That makes sense.
I wasn't actually like pursuing the mystery of who the... I wasn't even really thinking about that. I didn't care.
Yeah.
I didn't care about that mystery particularly. Mm-hmm. And so when it was revealed, I'm like, oh.
Neat.
That makes sense. All
right. Oh, okay.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
But it was not the focus, so I didn't really think about it.
Yeah, I think so, or I should mention it, because I've read three Discworld books so far. I've read Small Gods, Mort, and this, and it would go in that order of my liking Small Gods and Mort than this, and another good addition to Discworld. Maybe the difference between my enthusiasm is more so with Mort and Small Gods. They feel all tight and in one book, and the message, the themes, and the jokes all feels like a season of television. If we're going to continue that analogy, mm-hmm. of that feels not. Of course, this book is complete, but it all feels like it feels like there's more to it. This one, the plot. The satire was definitely the first thought, I think. It was like satire first, then the rest came to help the satire, which made this a fun book. But for me, I think it'll be probably a middling Discworld book after I read all 41 books. I imagine this one being above the middle or something like that. For I'm just assuming I'm going to love... I love Terry Pratchett so much, I'm assuming others are going to top it.
You're going to love a bunch of them. However, that is a part of Discworld. There's occasionally some books that I think focus far more just on the satire and just there to be funny.
Yeah.
To some degree, I think that's what Guards is. It does have more to say there, but if my understanding is right about the rest of the series from talking to other people, the characters get far more of...
Especially Vimes, I've heard.
Yes.
Yeah.
He is frequently said to be like the favorite character of the entire series.
I'm excited.
So... Clearly, he gets a lot more attention later on.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard people's favorite Discworld novel is often the very last Guards book.
Is that Reaper Man or is that the next one?
I believe it's Thud.
Thud's the last one. Okay.
Well, the last Guards book.
Got it. Last City Watch.
The last City Watch book.
Okay.
I believe I'm right.
Let's see.
Am I wrong?
How many City Watch books are in Discworld that can solve it? There are... Oh, 8. We had it wrong at the beginning. It goes Guards, Men-at-Arms, Feet of Clay, Jingo, The Fifth Elephant, Night Watch, Thud, and then Snuff.
Got it. I don't think Snuff is people's favorite. I believe it's Thud.
Is it? Okay.
I've heard that one more frequently than others.
Okay.
That's fine.
Yes. Okay. I believe that's correct. But Thud? Okay. Great. Anyway, we're going to be reading all of Discworld, so
yeah.
We will get to them. But yeah, this one, so plot for you, still really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's still a really good plot. It's just I think you said it right. The satire came first before the plot itself and the characters.
Yeah, and I do like how you had multiple things going on, like we mentioned, but you have the dragon plot line, you have the City Watch mm-hmm. facing the dragon, and you got a lot of... Yeah, I don't have too much else to say. I don't want to get repetitive with it, but that's all I have. Anything else?
I agree.
Yeah. Okay, world building. What did you give world building out of 5 stars?
Gave it a 4.25. Really great world building.
Nice.
I love Discworld. I love Ankh-Morpork. How can I not?
Yes. I give it a 4-star. Great.
Yeah.
I had a great... It's so immersive. Where the tone first for Discworld books gets you completely immersed. And then you have the aspects with the dragons who basically have IBS. And then you have the library, you have death, and you have the city of Ankh-Morpork.
Yes. I'm giving a lot of credit here for the city of Ankh-Morpork. I think if this is your introduction to that city, I think it does such a fantastic job of not only answering a lot of questions, but immediately getting a vibe for the city. Knowing not just like what the city will look like, but how the citizens react to things.
Yeah.
Like it's the patrician has like his view of the city of being like an organism, and that him kind of like, you know, the crowds are a part of this living organism. If the city is alive, the citizens are like the blood, the moving blood through the city, and you can manipulate things. So that's how it feels. And so when the crowd reacts to how when the dragon becomes king, you get an understanding of, oh, this is how these people react.
That's what his wife was pro dragon being king.
Yeah.
That the Connells.
Yes.
That was the thing. And he was like, I didn't know she was
Yeah.
That was it. But yes, Ankh-Morpork, how would you describe it, or as this book put it, how would you describe the city?
It's a city perpetually on fire that is constantly being rebuilt, and you can't see the fire.
That's perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Just perpetual, you know, this endless cycle.
Did Terry Pratchett write that? Or did you just... oh, man, I had another tab in here. What was... Oh, that's for next. Okay. I thought I missed the tab for earlier section. But yeah, Ankh-Morpork, very real. The tone of Discworld in general, of Guards Guards, gets you to realize, as absurd as it is, there can only be these casts of characters. If you know what an Ankh-Morpork-ian citizen is and is like, you know their tendencies, you know who would fit into this world and who wouldn't. You know, as soon as, if you were to try to put another character into this book, you go, they don't fit in Ankh-Morpork. No, they're too not Ankh-Morpork-ian.
Well, that's the thing, is it's absurd, but it's particularly absurd. Other absurd things don't work in Discworld, but the way Pratchett sets things up, it makes... I go, oh, that's really funny and absurd, but also that makes sense in this weird world. With everything of how you add on top of things of, one, the idea that there's so much magic and weirdness that the weird thing is Carrot's sword being wholly unmagical. Like, it's uniquely not magic. That's weirder. A witch looked at it, went, really? Not even an ounce? That's weird. That's strange. Okay.
Yeah.
So, things like that, the books being, you know, words having magic, which, one, power. Beautiful thing for an author to actually describe, of, like, just setting that up. But worlds being magic, therefore the library being one of the densely populated magic where a lot of stuff can go wrong. Add into that with, you know, the one in a million shot being actually, you know, is 100% accurate. Like, if it's a one in a million shot, it happens every time. Those aspects work well in a world where words have magical power, and if the more dense they are, the more power is going on. So those things work well together. The ironic, the wordplay being actually magical. It's lovely.
It's very impressive to me to take absurdism seriously, because you can get so out there that we've talked about this a lot before, especially when talking about Tolkien's essay on fairy stories, where I'd argue, and as Tolkien would and others, but the hard thing to do with fantasy is you're fighting an uphill battle of, first you have to get someone to believe in the secondary world, and then you have to tell a good story. Now, someone could argue too, hey, it's easier because you can kind of make anything up, and the sky's your limit. But the tough thing is to convince that person that, hey, actually forget reality for a bit and work within my rules, and then believe, root for these characters, follow the story along. And so there's a very fine line where you can get absurd and weird to the point of you're just going, okay, it's nonsense, and you could kind of write it off. Now, obviously, we're fantasy readers, so we're going to be more forgiving of that, But you have a point in the book to bring up?
Well, there's a particular moment where I got that.
Yeah.
I went, oh, that's really funny. That's absurd. And then went, oh, that actually makes sense. And it was the absurdity, then, oh, no, I'm this book and I am taking it seriously.
Grounded.
I'm not just supposed to laugh at it.
Was it the explanation of the Thieves Guild?
Yes, it was exactly that.
Because the Thieves Guild was described in this way of, are you trying to pull up the exact passage?
I am trying to find it. It was really early on.
It was very early on. I think it was, let's see, I'll try to find it too. But it wasn't like first 10 pages though. It was a little bit past that.
Was it earlier?
Well, want to do it from memory?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But basically the setup, the humor part is the patrician explaining through narration of, or the narrator explaining the patrician's thoughts of, when he came in charge, realizing that, you know, crime is inevitable, and then if you're always going to have crime, it might as well be organized.
Yeah.
So he decided to invite all of the, you know, the underground, unofficial thieves guild and leaders of the criminal underground to a party, and basically said, like, hey, look, we're gonna make a crime legal to some degree. Thieving will be allowed as long as you know, keep it within certain percentages and means, and we'll discuss and negotiate, and whatever that rate is, you guys can thieve and you won't be arrested. We won't, you know, arrest you for it. So it'll be good for everyone.
Yeah.
And then the criminal's going like, all right, sure. Why not? Like, you're not going to arrest me. Cool.
Sounds great.
And the thieves going like, yeah, I'm just going to, I get to take whatever I want now and not deal with the consequences. Awesome. It fully discrediting the patrician is like, yeah, this is never going to work. And then he calls them back in and says, by the way, now that you've, you know, visited, I know your faces. I know where I know who your wives are. I know where your children play. So if you find any unlicensed thievery, I know where to go knocking. And so all of them going, oh, this was not an idle threat. So they take it, the thieves take it very seriously.
Yes, and the thieves are law-abiding citizens.
They do not suffer unlicensed thievery, that they're better police than the police would be, because they police their own much. Because if there's an unlicensed thief and the patrician finds out and that there's...
They're in trouble.
Then they get in trouble and they lose their loved ones. And so it's like, oh, this is a funny concept taken very seriously. I loved it. That was a big fall in love moment for
and
me.
And I love the patrician. And how are we saying it right? Because we got it wrong earlier. The patrician,
we did
right?
get it wrong. Yeah, it is the patrician.
Yeah, I love the patrician, how he impacts the world. He was my favorite part of it. Even him getting imprisoned in the book. Yeah. And how he's in this dungeon. Of course, he made an escape plan for himself in a prison. So he the whole structure and system is made for him to be able to survive. And he's always has a plan B. He always has a way out. And so he's created back doors. He's created everything he can to make sure it works just to imperfection. Because he's made this city that wouldn't be able to function on its own. It's had how many kings in the past. But he makes the city work by fighting with it, not against it.
Yes, he's very zen-like. He's always going with the river and always directing it rather than trying to fight the city. He's one of the city.
You're not going to win that battle. You just have to go with, just instead, cause the stream to go slightly left, and that's it. Then you can get it to work. But yeah, anything else with world building?
No, you are right. The patrician's probably he's the best aspect of the world building. And love his character, but I distinctly do not ever want his POV. I do not want a book about him. I don't want...
Uh-oh, maybe it's coming.
I hope it's not, because he's a great character in the sense he's in the background. You never really know what's going on. He's the mastermind above it all, somehow always has a plan B, and everything will always work out for the patrician. That's just how it is. Like, how does Ankh-Morpork stay the same book after book? The patrician's a key factor of it. Like, it's I love it just how it is.
I would like a perspective. I just want one.
I don't want his perspective. I don't want it. I like him being mysterious.
What'd you give Pros out of 5 stars?
I gave Pros, again, a 4.25. Really great.
I give it 4.5. Spectacular. Yeah.
Now, this Pros is very funny. It does a bunch of combinations of... Ugh, have you noticed, like, so with good. A lot of other comedy books, like, yeah. there will be a style of comedy. The comedy will either be mostly fart jokes or situational humor. Like, they kind of have their wheelhouse. I feel like Guards and Discworld itself goes through every type. It has every type of humor in it. It has your fart jokes. It has your grammatical humor. It has historical references and puns. Everything. Every type of humor is in this book. I love it.
Yes, it does. the imagined funny scenario, the hyperbole jokes, kind of everything. It does have a lot large range, even though the jokes in this one were focused on the same idea of satire with the dragon medieval stuff. So that was the idea of the humor. But yeah, the jokes themselves kind of pack different types of humor, types of joke. Yeah, this was one scene for me where this line for me, I went, ooh, out loud, because this was a mini paragraph between two other point of views. And it was the last line of the last paragraph was thunder rolled, ... Okay. It is said that the gods play games with the lives of men, but what games and why, and the identities of the actual pawns and what the game is and what the rules are, who knows? Best not to speculate. Thunder rolled. It rolled a 6. It's just so neat that it works within the...
It's such a good paragraph. That's a great intro to a book paragraph, I think.
Yeah.
Because especially just...
That wasn't the intro, but...
I know it isn't, but it would work well because just...
Yeah.
The idea that thunder rolled and it rolled a 6. And you go, and just the previous question, what does a 6 mean? Is that good? Is it bad?
Yes.
I love all that.
It's so fun. It's so fun. And so Terry Pratchett, how would you describe his style of writing? Because this one, besides the humor itself, how would you explain his style? How does he write?
He's a efficient, tight writer, if that makes sense. He cuts away a lot of the unnecessary fluff, like chapters.
Who needs chapter
out? Who needs chapters? Who needs who needs a segue into another character?
He just needs footnotes.
Like, you just stop with one character and immediately pick up with another. No segue. No, just a hard break. So you just have, instead of weaving in, like trying to carefully weave in a particularly funny or informative world building aspect into like the dialogue, he just adds a footnote, just like says weird thing, adds footnote at bottom, explanation of very funny thing, and you add it back. Like, that's definitely more efficient than trying to figure out how to add a conversation to let that sink in.
Yeah.
He's an efficient writer.
He is. And he has the kind of prose we like, where it does multiple things at once,
yep.
where it's both funny and gives you a bit of character and builds the world. It's great. And what he does too throughout this book, he has, with all of his, he has bolds and italics, and he uses so much in the physical writing of this that we mentioned earlier, I wouldn't like to audiobook this, even though I know the audiobook narrator is great and they have a whole cast. This is something I like to physically read just because I feel like I pick up a little bit more or get some more enjoyment out of it reading it in my head, or just seeing the he does so many things in the text, even misspelling words. And yes. that I'm guessing the audiobook accounts for that too, but it's nice to see and visualize.
It does its best, but yeah, there's a bunch of jokes, like there's a lot of word jokes about basically misspellings of real world things in Discworld to make them sound ridiculous. Insurance is spelled like in short ants or something like that. It's a type of ant, and yeah, you can kind of get that with audiobook, but it reads a lot easier and funnier if you could actually just read. Like, you get the joke when it's written down of, like, it's mocking the idea of insurance, which, fair, it should be mocked. Yeah. Insurance is dumb, but whatever.
Yeah, that's why I don't have any medical.
Yeah, who needs
who needs that? Life? No.
Ugh, terrible.
This whole, actually, not that this is part of his prose, but just the title Guards, Guards, with guards, exclamation, it's a fun title to a book as well. And it almost the title kind of sets you up for his style of prose, because what book is called?
Well, that's true.
Exclaiming,
it's not
Guards, Guards.
It's also, it's not Guards, Guards. It's
guards,
guards, Guards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even the title sets you up for his style, because when I was saying to Nicole what I was reading, I said Guards, Guards. She goes, what? Oh, Guards, Guards. She goes, what? Like, isn't that a phrase? Like, oh, it's the title of the book. It's Terry Pratchett. He's absurd. I had to explain more just because the title's already funky enough.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's a fantastic writer, and this was his eighth book in. I know from I think it was Mort. So Mort, book four, and so on, he seemed to have his style down.
Yeah. Going chronologically for myself, it took to book four to really get his style down.
Yeah.
It's in a similar vein that the first Witches book I enjoyed quite a bit, but doesn't hit its stride till the second Witches book, which I believe is... Yeah, so Equal Rights I enjoyed, but Weird Sisters, which is book seven, which is the book right before this, really loved Weird Sisters. That's the three main protagonists of the Witches series, and where Granny Weatherwax gets to shine. I love it.
Yeah, and the last thing on the prose for this one is the dialogue is a big focus, where he's able to make natural, funny dialogue, which is always impressive.
That's one of the harder aspects of writing that I've noticed with a bunch of the books we read, especially with indie books. I feel like the last hurdle to get over is making smooth yet realistic and not clunky dialogue.
Yep.
So, and you know, Terry Pratchett's a master, so it sounds amazing when he writes it.
Richard, what did you think about Guards, Guards overall?
I thought it was great.
Yay. This was another one of the Discworld books. We are closer to ending the channel, because after we read every Discworld book, it's over.
Our final video on this channel will be the final Discworld book. Once we have reviewed all of them,
goodbye.
That's when we delete the channel.
Why delete?
No. We don't just quit. We delete
it's over.
It's
okay.
Over.
Damn.
You better download these episodes.
Wow. There's a joke somewhere there, but okay. That's Guards, Guards. Let us know what you thought down below. We'll be reviewing more Discworld books in the future, maybe very quickly. And
If you really liked this video, don't recommend us to read another Discworld book. If you really didn't like this video, let us know which Discworld book we should read next and how soon we should read it.
Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next episode.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.